SNL season 41 is over, but we're just getting started, taking one last look back here on the Saturday Night Live post-show recap. And now, here are the two guys who will not be sticking our heads in a ceiling fan at any time this summer. I'm Rob Sister, and here's Rich Tackerberg. Rich, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Glad to be here one last time. It's crazy to think that we've wrapped up another season.
Yeah, this season really did go by quick. I don't know if there was just so many other things going on that it just didn't seem like it took that long, but I can't believe Saturday Night Live is over for the year still.
Yeah, yeah. It's done. It's done and in the can. Unbelievable.
What a year. I mean, I remember back in the summer, it was, oh, I can't wait for Saturday Night Live to come back. What are they going to say about this Donald Trump business?
Yeah, and who thought we'd be still talking about Donald Trump at the end of the year? It's pretty crazy.
It's crazy. We saw Donald Trump host the show this season, so we've really been all over the map with SNL season 41. 21 episodes down. We're going to talk about all of it, and of course, Rich has done an incredible amount of research to prepare for this podcast.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing looking back at season 41, really how much good stuff was produced in these 21 episodes. You know, it was, you know, the overall takeaway for me was looking at all the episodes again, sort of sketch by sketch and seeing what worked and didn't work. Really, I thought when you break it down, you're really looking at, of 21 episodes, we're looking at 6 episodes that were just really solid. Really, really solid episodes. Really, like, just great, like, you know, great, great stuff. 8 episodes that were solid, that were fun and enjoyable 90 minutes. Couple of clunkers here and there, but overall, really good times. 2 were on the line, and then about 5 were, ooh, boy. But when you think about it, that's basically, you know, that's a 2-to-1 batting average. They're really, I mean, I'd say, you know, you're looking at about, you know, 14 absolutely worth your 90 minutes, no questions asked, good, fun episodes, and 7 that were like, yeah, you probably could have skipped them. For any television show, that's a great batting average. For a sketch comedy show, that's unbelievable. So I think really for me, the takeaway is while we may not have had that many sort of true viral moments where SNL was the center of attention for a moment in time in America, I'd say in general, 41 goes in the books as a win. There was a lot to like about this season.
Yeah, maybe we need some sort of a stat of SNL win percentage for the season. You should go back and watch every episode from every season and then let us know how many are overall positive winning seasons or losing seasons.
Well, now I know what I'm doing over the summer, Rob. Thanks for the assignment.
Rich, what have you been doing since SNL ended 2 weeks ago?
Nothing. I mean, looking back at old episodes, that's all. First, I got to breathe. That was the nice thing. Just relax. There is something nice about like Saturday night. Oh, I can go to sleep at 10:15 tonight. That mm-hmm. There is something very sexy about that. At least for the wow. Summer break. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't give people the wrong idea.
That's true.
All right. So we're gonna go through everything. Rich has done awards for sketch of the year and all sorts of other superlatives here that we're going to do. We're going to talk about the big picture stuff and who were the winners and losers in the cast, who may or may not be coming back. And we are looking at you, JR. So we've got a lot to discuss here today. Also, Rich, I don't even know if you're aware of this. Post-Show Recaps is nominated for not one, but 2 podcast awards here for 2016 here as we talk superlatives.
Yes, that is very deserving of an award. I'd like to see that in the win column this year.
Yes, well, Post-Show Recaps is nominated for the best TV and film podcast and also the People's Choice Podcast of the Year. Daily voting is going on until June 12th at podcastawards.com, and we do greatly appreciate your votes for that at podcastawards.com. All right, Rich, so why don't we get into just sort of like the big picture thoughts as we begin the autopsy of season 41?
Yeah, I'd say big picture, it was an interesting season. We'll talk about the cast in a second, but you know, you didn't see any huge breakout cast member. It wasn't a season of a huge breakout new character that took the world by storm. You didn't see any major shifts in sort of cast politics. You know, when you look at what host did really well versus what host didn't, there's really no, there's nothing to it specifically. Some of them were dramatic actors that did very well. Some of them were comedians. Some of them were stand-up comics. Some of them were musicians. So a real sort of mix across the board, you know, and interestingly that, you know, we have a season where with all the Donald Trump stuff going on, really the this will be noted as the year of Bernie Sanders. I think that the, you know, seeing Larry David show up five times, including one hosting duty as Bernie Sanders, was really probably the thing that sort of made the season work. So that was interesting to me. I'd also say, you know, interesting, I always find that the batting average or the pre-tapes are generally higher, a lot of good pre-tapes here. But I would say, like, interestingly, I thought this was a season where a very high percentage of fun stuff post-update. I thought there was a lot of good stuff. When I looked at, like, sort of when I was picking my what's the best 10-to-1 sketch for the evening, I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 that I thought were up for contention at a 21. So a lot of interesting stuff going on in that sort of weird kind of what is this? This is kind of kooky. This could never be on before update kind of stuff. So I just thought in general, sort of an interesting, very balanced kind of a year for them.
How do you attribute that stuff? Do you feel like that they feel like that they're in a good place and they take more chances? Or do you feel like that that's sort of where there are young up and coming talent and that's where they sort of cut their teeth?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. I think that is part of it is when I think a little bit when you do have a balanced cast, you start to see people getting stuff on the air late in the night that you might not often see. You know, also, you know, you're getting to see some of the actors that may not have gotten a break. And I think other stuff is stuff that just sort of didn't sort of fit into any buckets. So they thought, well, let's put it towards the end. But I definitely think that they're taking more chances. And I would, it might be because some, you know, we always talk about the first live sketch post monologue is generally sort of that prime spot. That's where you've got the most eyeballs. I think that, you know, in years past and continuing into this year, you know, you did have a lot of misses. Kind of the big, broad, go for the masses kind of stuff isn't working as well all the time. So I think, you know, they're opening up the sort of filter to take more chances.
All right. So then let's get into the fun stuff of talking about the cast and who had an up year and who had a down year. You know, that in the past, there's been different articles that have tracked like the overall minutes on the floor for all of the different cast members. We don't have that, so it's sort of a look and feel to go through this, right?
Yeah, I would say this is just sort of feeling out sort of who fared better this year compared to years prior, looking at different casts. I would say, for me, I think, you know, who had a really good year? Clearly, Kate McKinnon had a great year. Kenan Thompson clearly had a great year. I mean, you talk about Kenan, this is a guy who, you know, a year or two ago, I was pleading to the gods would retire already and move on because he was driving me crazy. And he's really sort of, I think, sort of been this sort of great, you know, person on the cast now who really is the elder statesman of the show, can be plugged into in most anything and does really well. But I would also say that I think that Pete Davidson had a very good year. I mean, I think that's one of the shows of sort of bench strength here is Weekend Update, that not only in addition to the cast of characters that you have on Weekend Update, but you have Pete Davidson and Leslie Jones as not one but two correspondents playing themselves, doing ostensibly stand-up material. So that bench strength is just great. And Pete Davidson definitely showed up more, where last year he really was the guy who showed up on Weekend Update and then at Home Base for the Good Nights. We're seeing Pete in a lot more sketches, whether he's got a big role or whether he's just got a funny line or two. I think he's really coming into his own. So I thought that. I also think Colin Jost had a very good year. I think that he really has come into his own. I think that he has sort of shed the moniker of Seth Meyers light. I think he's sort of found his own way, which is exciting to see. I think he's had some really nice runs.
You're talking about just the winners right now, but yes. I noticed that you didn't include Colin Jost and Michael Che as a pair.
I did not. For me, I think that Michael Che is still not having the season that we want him to have. I think that he is still, I mean, he's obviously a very funny, comedian. I think he's had some very funny moments on the show, but I think that he's still struggling to fit into the Saturday Night Live box. And I don't think that Weekend Update has really changed to fit into the Michael Che box. So I wouldn't want to see him leave necessarily next year or be replaced, but I think he's still struggling to find himself. I think his delivery is much more deadpan. It's much more sort of slow. There's sort of a quiet irony to him that doesn't necessarily work with, jokes that are on cue cards that are meant as just sort of rapid fire hit and machine gun style move on. So I think Che has a lot of room to grow next year within the box of Saturday Night Live.
So what would you want to see him do more? Sort of just do more sort of like long form pieces where he's just getting on a rant about something?
Yeah, I think they need to figure out what is a natural style that works for Michael Che that also works for the rhythm of Update. And I don't know exactly what that is, but I think that we still sort of have to find that, and every person who's had that seat has sort of had to figure it out. It does get more complicated when there's two people. It's easy, but I think that the people who don't fit into those sort of boxes, like if you want to go back to a Colin Quinn or mm-hmm. Kevin Nealon, who had different styles, while I appreciated them, never really sort of were considered one of the greats. Not because they're not great comedians, but because they don't have that sort of rapid style hit, 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 hit. So I do hope that they do try to find more off the beaten path formats of jokes, joke runs, rants, whatever it might be, that would lend itself to Michael's form of natural comedic delivery, which I don't think we've necessarily found yet.
Okay. Who else was a winner?
I got to say Vanessa Bayer. I mean, we talked about this during the year. I think Vanessa Bayer was someone who, at one point was, and I think maybe it probably is the most seasoned female cast member, and yet was, persona non grata for, weeks at a time. This year, I think she really, she had a number of funny bits, but most specifically, I think that she was sort of the royalty of the pre-tape. I think that she found her niche, whether by design or whether by just happenstance. So many great pre-tapes that she specifically just stole the show and was just a great actress in a very well written bit. So I think that she really sort of created great longevity for herself in that, in addition to some of the live stuff that she did.
Okay. All right. What about the people who were staying the same?
Well, I would say very quickly, I'd say A.D. Bryant continues to be solid, hasn't really broken out yet. Cecily Strong continues to be solid, continues to do good characters, good Weekend Update characters, but again, hasn't had a huge breakout. Beck Bennett, I'd say, had maybe a little bit of a better year. I think last year was very much overshadowed by Kyle Mooney. This year, I think probably held his own. And Leslie Jones, who came on like gangbusters, continued to be solid, was gone because of an injury for a little bit or really sort of downplayed. Yeah, she was on the DL list. So I think she continued to do fine, but I think she was probably in the same place.
I feel like of the four, and I know you a little bit touched on it, that I do feel like that Beck Bennett is really trending upward. I feel like that he's almost always all over the place.
Yeah, and I was debating where to put him because I sort of feel the same thing. I don't know that he had necessarily a character that was sort of a big thing. In a way, it was interesting that I think where I put Beck in the same, but where I see Taron Killam on the downward trend, but Kyle Mooney on the downward trend, Bobby Moynihan on the downward trend. I think so. When you look at, he's really one of the only other white male cast member that's not in Weekend Update that I had as a winner is Pete Davidson. So you can really, I think just by holding his own, in a sense, is a win, because Taryn and Bobby are the elder statesmen of the show, taking out Keenan, you know, and yet there are whole episodes where they can be sort of lost. Kyle yeah. Mooney was seemed to be the heir apparent to be the next of the white male cast members, the next person. And he sort of faded back a little bit, still doing some fun stuff, but sort of faded back a little bit. So I give Beck that he sort of held his own. You're seeing him in as the dad in a lot of sketches, the boss in a lot of sketches, the straight guy, the here and there sort of doing some funny bits. So good for him for holding his own.
Yeah, just looking at the cast laid out like this, I mean, that's a lot of people. I mean,
it's a lot of people.
16 people is a reality show cast.
Exactly.
It's a lot of people to be following, and like getting screen time for people in all the sketches. Like, it is probably, either competitive, or if they're trying to be fair, it's very difficult, I think, to get everybody into this.
And they're clearly not trying to be fair. Mm-hmm. So you're right. So it then becomes, you know, you really have to sort of fight your way through to get noticed, which is unbelievable. I'd say if you've got, eight sketches, seven, eight pieces of comedy business per episode and 16 people, those are bad batting averages. So, also I would say people who had a tough year, Jay Farrow was amazing. You and I talked about it, I think, on the last episode. The only season I can think of in 41 years where we did not have the sitting president in a cold open in the entire season. I think we saw Obama once in a pre-tape. Maybe there's one I'm not even remembering. So Jay taking a very big back seat.
But is that on Jay? Is that because his impression's not funny enough, or because they just did not have an angle on Obama?
Yeah, and I should say, when people having a good year or a bad year, it's not necessarily their fault. I don't think that Taryn Killam got less funny. I think Taryn's fantastic. I think Bobby will always be my personal MVP because I just love him to death. So I don't think it's about talent. I think it's about circumstance. I think you're right. It's about happenstance, circumstance.
Because Obama in this case, SNL was not working before Jay Farrow got there.
Correct. They never, even with Fred Armisen, they never figured out what's the funny,
in eight
what's
years.
That funny character. Yeah. And I don't necessarily, I definitely don't necessarily blame Jay Farrow for that. I think it's a hard one to crack because there's nothing inherently funny about him that they can sort of do. I've said this before about Jay Farrow with some of his impressions is I wish sometimes they would be less accurate and more wacky, and he might have more, I wish they would even try next season doing an Obama at 12:50 a.m. where instead of it being accurate, it's just something just balls out kooky crazy with Jay Farrow doing it, and see if they can kind of get something new to stick, which they didn't really do this season. Mm-hmm. And, just round out quickly, Sasheer Zamata, I think, had a really tough year. I think, we even noted there was one sketch in the season finale two episodes earlier where she had notable lines in it, and I thought, well, she must have written it, and sure enough, she did, which is a bad sign. She's really just, I think, struggling to either be written for or to find a voice. Very tough that she does not do a lot of strong impressions that are helpful to pop culture right now. I think that can often really hold you back, but I think she's sort of struggling. And then the final thought, of course, John Rudnitsky, which, bless his heart, I'd be surprised if we see him come back next year.
Yeah, it's just hard to see what he brings to this cast that we don't already have somewhere else.
Yes, I agree.
And 21 episodes.
Yeah. And there wasn't anything that we saw that we thought, oh, that was really funny, but the audience didn't connect with it, or boy, he really stole the show in this moment. And unfortunately, when you're coming on the heels of, they bring Leslie Jones on and her very first piece destroys, or Pete Davidson comes on and in the season premiere does a Weekend Update bit that it just kills. Like, the bar definitely raises. I think it might be harder when you're not part of a team, you're not part of a writing group. You're not needed for an impression. So I don't know that it's necessarily his fault. I feel like we never got to see the John Rudnitsky that auditioned and got in, which is a bummer because I would like to have seen what they saw in him to put
Patrick
him on
Swayze.
The show. That's true. That's true. Good point.
So then with this cast that we have here of 16 people, if we're both on the same page, we don't think that John is going to be coming back. Do you think that they will replace him? Will they add to this? Or do you think that they will potentially go with just this same group again?
I think they're going to add. I think that you're in that weird situation of you've got too big of a cast, but you don't have a breakout star. You don't have your Eddie Murphy, your Adam Sandler, your Dana Carvey, your Mike Myers, your Will Ferrell. So I think you have to keep sort of fishing. You need that big. That's what SNL, the ratings go crazy. Pop culture is become, you know, refers to it when you've got that big star that everybody wants to see.
But Kate McKinnon's not that star?
I think Kate McKinnon's, no, I don't think she is. I think that she's one of the best that they have, but I don't think anyone's turning on Saturday Night Live at 11:30 on Saturday night to see what Kate McKinnon will do this week. I think that she's one of the reasons that many of us look forward to the show, but I don't think there's that big character. I don't think since Stefan left the show, we have that character that everyone is saying at 11:29 p.m., oh, I hope we see blank tonight on the show. And I think that they still have to probably mine the comedy community to find the actor or actress who brings that.
But I wonder if in the post Seth Meyers era, if that's what they're going for in terms of finding that character. Because I feel like that season 41 was a season of very few returning recurring characters other than like a Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump.
Well, I agree, but I don't think that's by choice. I think that if they had it, they would have beat it to death. There's one notable exception, which we can talk about here, which was one of the oddest trends of season 41, was no Jebediah Atkinson, which was just so surprising and so odd that it was, you know, probably the closest thing we had to a buzzy character, and we never saw him. So that might speak to something behind the scenes, but I would say in general, if they had something hot, they certainly would have brought it back.
I mean, I don't know if you're going to cover this in the awards. Who is the reigning recurring sketch champion right now?
Boy, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know
sketch is the Californians of right now.
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know that there necessarily is that. I mean,
there's a lot of, a rotation of update people.
Yeah, you're going to see cinema classics with Reese DeWatt on a fairly regular basis. You know, we're going to see Weekend Update characters. We saw Laura Parsons, the junior newscaster of tomorrow, way too many times. We're still going to see the porn stars once or twice a season at the end of the night doing a commercial. But I don't know that we have anything that big other than the talk shows, which whether it's there's no specific talk show that in and of itself is hilarious. That's usually just the format to bring on a number of political figures and talk about sort of topical events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I don't miss the sort of beat you over the head with the, oh my God, we're going to see this character. I think even seeing, we saw Church Chat, just recently. And I was like, you know what? I don't miss this. I don't miss this idea of just sort of like, oh, we all know what's going to happen. We're going to beat this to death kind of thing. I like when it's sort of like, yeah, we don't know what's coming next. And it's not just the same old sketches over and over. Even, Jonah Hill comes back and we don't see his character, Adam Grossman, the 5-year-old at Benihana, which even though that was not necessarily the best episode, I like that we are sort of breaking it up and we're not going back to as much It's Girlfriend's Talk Show for the 8th time, even though those actresses.
Did we get that this season?
No, I don't think we did. I don't think we got a Girlfriend's Talk Show.
Well, I wasn't missing that one.
Yeah. and I didn't miss it. I wonder, if it was anything, it would have been in the Miley Cyrus, but I don't think we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting to me.
Okay. All right, well, we'll see where they end up going with that in terms of season 42. But Rich, let's get into the tackies. Let's start to talk awards.
Yeah. So where do you want to start? Should we go through an episode ostensibly? Or
sure.
Starting off, I would say, let's talk about sort of cold open. What was really the best cold open of the year? And I think in general, when we talk about cold open in season 41, we're talking about Larry David as Bernie Sanders. So, almost nothing else held a candle to that. You know, he was in a number of the cold opens. I think I'm going to go to the end of the year for my award on this one, though. I feel like, the Hillary and Bernie at a bar at the end of the night was probably a send off to the Bernie Sanders character. But to me, it was such a great cold open because it wasn't, hey, let's parody a debate and sort of play out moments that we had seen on television or a press conference. It was imagining two characters in a situation that they would never really be in, Hillary and Bernie. I thought it was wonderful chemistry between Kate McKinnon and Larry David. Even better chemistry than Larry David had with Julia Louis-Dreyfus when she was playing Elaine Bennis in a previous cold open when she was the host. So I thought in general, just really strong, very funny writing, both topical and silly. And then we had this wonderful sort of breaking the fourth wall, walking off the stage and them dancing through the halls of Studio 8H, which is something that very few shows can pull off without feeling like clawingly precious. And they are clearly one of them. So for me, that was my favorite opening. And of course, you're going to pull at my heartstrings when you have the entire cast jump on each other's shoulders and yell live from New York at Saturday Night. That is a huge win for me.
Good send off in the Fred Armisen episode. Well, any other cold opens stand out?
I would say in the Aria Grande episode, the Jake Tapper was probably an interesting one because it was probably some of the most well-written Bernie Sanders material. He's changing at night and he's like, hey, he's complaining about his people who support him on Facebook. He's like, look, I'm good. I'm not five posts a day good. You had Trump and with the violence going on and a fun Ben Carson and some
Trump
edgy.
Stakes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that was, talking about Ben Carson, that he's one of the good ones. And so I thought that was actually pound for pound, that was very, very good. And some of the best use of overall sort of wrap up, Republican and Democrat stuff, sort of what was going on in the zeitgeist at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other cold opens you want to talk about? You want to talk monologues?
Let's go monologues. I think, monologues, I've always said, is the hardest part of the SNL, especially when you've got people who are in hosts that are often on their own. They're not used to live TV. Some of them are not even actors. They are musicians or they are, UFC champions or you're sort of being thrown into that. I think we had a couple of interesting pieces here. I thought Amy Schumer's stand up was very fun. I really liked Elizabeth Banks. She did she performed What a Feeling, where mm-hmm. she was the director of the bit as well as the actress performing it as a little send up that she directed Pitch Perfect 2. I thought that was very funny. Nothing was ballsier than Fred Armisen's at the very end of this year. He did his one man show Love from New York. I did Saturday Right, which was just super fun. But I think that I'm giving the award of best monologue this year to the Larry David's stand-up routine. That's just, we didn't expect Larry David to be doing stand-up comedy. He is not known as a stand-up comedian, but he was just great. He did, and he was doing meta. He was doing stand-up comedy about hosting Saturday Night Live, and that he's not a host, he's a guest. He went from a poor schmuck to a rich prick. And talking about how, he can't wait to leave. He can't wait for the show to be over. He doesn't want to say, we've got a great show for you tonight. He's like, why set those level of expectations? The show's so-so. It's good. You'll be surprised. So I think it's just in general, just really, really good stuff. From classic stand-up to, uber meta stuff, held the audience a surprise. I don't think any of us saw him doing classic stand-up, and a great way to go into the episode.
Okay. Then, Rich, the next category is the live sketch.
So, well, this would be sort of the I would say the sketch of the night. I mean, this mm-hmm. the sketch of the year. I mean, and so we'll go big here and just sort of get into it, and then we can sort of work down. I always separate out pre-tapes because they're such a different form of comedy. They're a different pacing. There's different skills involved. But when you look at live sketches, I think there was a lot of fun stuff here. I would say for me, the runner-up would be from the Ryan Gosling episode, the NSA alien investigation. This was the first we saw this twice, where three people have had some experience, to which A.D. Bryant and Bobby Moynihan are going to interview them. And you know, the format of the sketch is Cecily Strong and the host had very positive experiences, and then Kate McKinnon's character had a very negative experience. This first one, where they were abducted from aliens, was hilarious because not only was the writing super strong and Kate McKinnon was super strong, it was just one of those sort of lightning in a bottle that the whole cast was breaking. It didn't feel forced. It didn't feel contrived. It felt earned because it was just so silly. And watching her sort of soldier through that, Kate McKinnon, was really fun. And I think that was just a super fun piece. Lot of other fun stuff, you know, to talk about. But for me, I think that the sketch of the year, the overall, when I look back on season 41, to me, what was the sketch of the year was the game show from Tina Fey and Amy Poehler episode, which was the game show Meet Your Second Wife.
Very fun.
This was so, and this holds up so well. I mean, the premise of this, that, you know, it's three happily married men who are eventually going to, you know, end up with a second wife who is, you know, younger and younger, and meeting those women now in present day. And just so, you know, the writing was super strong. It had such a great premise and such an intelligent premise to it. But not only that, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler as the host of the game show were great. Unbelievable straight man work, unbelievable from Bobby Moynihan, Taron Killam, and Kenan Thompson, and then even great work from the wives in the audience. I mean, Vanessa Bayer played it beautifully, and A.D. Bryant was fun. Leslie Jones, I think, only had one line, but her looks were killing. So this holds up the whole way through. And there's a to me, the greatest moment is when, after the first two contestants, it's Kenan Thompson's going to meet his, you know, his second wife, and as they're playing the music, he's just chanting to himself, "Please don't be white, don't be white, don't be white." Mm-hmm. And it was so beautiful. And so just smart, funny, incisive, lean, really great sketch.
Yeah, and Cecily comes out and she's pregnant with his second wife.
Yeah, just super, super funny.
Also, the business with the kayak was also pretty clever. Was A.D. Bryant, yes, was one of the wives that was going to die in the kayak accident, and that, yes, was the prize on the show.
Yes, it was really great. There was even a point when a great moment when Vanessa Bayer says, "What is going on here? I thought this was a home makeover show." And Tina Fey says, "In a way, it is." And it was just so beautiful. So much of this was just great. Really, really fun.
Okay. All right, Rich, what about the best pre-tape commercial parody?
So, looking at commercial parodies, again, always a good year. They do this so well. I mean, you had the Mercedes AA class luxury sedan, which was the electric car that runs on AA batteries. You had the Star Wars action figures that you can keep in the package if you're a collector. You had Totino's pizza rolls, which turned into an X-Files piece. A lot of fun stuff. For me, the runner up here, and I think that I stand a little bit on an island, I loved Aaron's List from the Elizabeth Banks episode, which was basically like a way to hire convicted sex offenders to do your household chores. I thought it was so funny. It was so on the edge of inappropriate. Really, really good. But for me, my favorite commercial of the year was from the Ryan Gosling episode. It was the app for women who are ready to sort of give up on meeting Mr. Right. And it was an app called Settle, S-E-T-T-L. Mm-hmm. And it was about just when you're ready to settle, here's the app for you. And I thought that they just did such a great job. It's not giving up, it's settling up. And everything about it was really funny. And again, Vanessa Bayer's got a great bit where she's marrying Taron Killam, who's this weird guy, but she says, "We're getting married in April, which is before my sister." And I just, it was so beautiful. So I just thought, great job with this. It did end a little weak, unfortunately, but overall, I thought this was probably the funniest commercial that they did.
Okay. Then in terms of the non-commercial pre-tape sketches.
So much great stuff here. I mean, really all over the place. From, you know, Mike O'Brien coming back to do Uber for Jen with Elizabeth Banks and the Oprah Winfrey life story. At the end of the year, this weird sort of Santa baby Quentin Tarantino film with Ryan Gosling. Mm-hmm. You know, a fun kind of Time to Bleed, Chris Hemsworth make a takeoff on action films. A lot of really good stuff in here. I feel like a lot of the lists that I've seen have called Burn Your Enthusiasm, which from the Larry David episode, as probably the pre-tape sketch of the year.
Pretty good.
And I will say, I certainly like, it was certainly very funny, certainly good. To me, it wasn't the best of the year because once we see the opening title card and the music, Burn Your Enthusiasm, I kind of knew where the sketch was going to go in the big picture, and that's exactly where it went. So I'm not going to knock it in any way, but I think there was better. And on this one, I'm going to call an actual tie because they're both so good. First up was from our season finale. You joked about it at the beginning, Farewell, Mr. Bunting. One simple sight gag, you know, a lot of time meticulously put into setting up a premise of a Dead Poets Society style school English class from way back when, and then just a beautiful sight gag of a head being severed by a ceiling fan, bing bang boom boom boom, and then it gets out. And I know it's very recent to all of us, but I tell you, looking back at everything they did, that absolutely does stand up as something worth noting as one of the best of the years. But I would say tied with that and maybe even better to me.
This is scandalous, Rich.
I know. I'm going to go. I think this got lost in the shuffle from the Melissa McCarthy episode. There was a pre-tape they did called The Day Beyoncé Turned Black. Mm-hmm. And it really holds up. It was the idea that it was when Beyoncé first released her new music video before the Super Bowl and white people realized that Beyoncé is actually black and not white. It was done as a movie thriller. And it just, from beginning to end, it holds up, very funny. Again, Vanessa Bayer really sort of anchors this as the white person who doesn't get it. But across the board, everyone's funny, including Sashir's got great lines. There's a great moment between Jay Farrow and Michael Che at the end, all the way to the very end when in the card that it says, this movie is rated NC-17 for white people and rated G for black people. I thought overall just very, very strong. And to me, one of the best pieces. I know I said this in one of the, it may have been during this episode when we covered it, that SNL pre-tapes, one of their really strong suits is white people are racist and they don't mean to be, but they are. And this was a great example of this. I thought they did such a great job.
Then in terms of Weekend Update, Rich, let's talk about the best Weekend Update correspondence of the year.
So I would say this was one where I'd say we probably had a little bit of a leaner year as far as, you know, great Weekend Updates. I don't know that we saw a lot of new stuff that was necessarily great. I did love from the Ariana Grande episode, Cecily Strong did the drunkest contestant on The Bachelor, which I thought was mm-hmm. very funny. And I had not even seen the specific person on The Bachelor that they were parodying. I thought this was very funny. But I would say there really wasn't a new character that I thought necessarily really clicked for me that I put on the list. I thought the one update character that really ate it on stage and really just died and yet I thought was quite funny was from the season premiere of the Miley Cyrus episode, Kyle Mooney did Pope Francis. Mm-hmm. And this absolutely tickled me. I thought this was really funny. I thought they did
that
a great job.
That it bombed job. Or it, you just thought it was no, good I, and it was I thought, unappreciated?
I was very surprised that it bombed. I just thought the piece itself was quite good. I thought he was very funny. I thought the writing was novel. It felt fairly fresh to me. It was almost a Stefan-like take on Pope Francis. With a little mix of sort of a Kanye kind of thing. I thought it was very funny, and the audience did not agree with me. The audience collectively went, oh boy. And I was surprised because I thought it was really good. But, you know, you had a good Frida Santini. I love Big Poppy. I don't know why I love David Ortiz. I shouldn't love
Maybe
David
you're
Ortiz.
You're a Red Sox fan.
But it does make me laugh. But for me, a character that I think sort of can sometimes be fantastic and sometimes really lay an egg. But this season, we only saw him once, but I thought was one of the best executions was Drunk Uncle. We had Drunk Uncle on the Donald Trump episode, and there was something about how Donald, because Drunk Uncle is a diehard Donald Trump fan, and that really said a lot, that he was said, you know, this is, you know, about Donald Trump. Finally, someone is saying the things I've been thinking as well as saying. And there was just so much. He talked about, like, you know, the thing about him and Donald Trump is they both love white Russians, and just a bunch of, you know, that he's going to make America grapes again. You know, Colin asks him about Ben Carson, and he's like, I'm not going to say anything. He's right there, and points to Michael Che. They ask about Hillary Clinton, and he just smashes the glass of bourbon in his hand, and then a hand reaches out and hands him another bourbon. And a couple of weird just exclamations. At one point, he just yells, her name is Bruce, which I thought was just beautiful. So I thought, Drunk Uncle is not always great, but in this case, I thought it was just super strong. Really, really good job.
The right spot for Drunk Uncle.
Right spot, right time, right writing, and we hadn't been beaten with a bunch of Drunk Uncles back-to-back where we kind of, again, it is absolutely Mad Libs. Everything about this, to the songs he sings, to the, oh, so I'm not, blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, is this Apple Watch gender neutral? Like, it's all, we know what the structure is, but they filled in the Mad Libs so superbly here. And knowing that he's a Donald Trump fan said was one of the best takes on takedowns of Donald Trump than anything else.
And then it was a tough year for correspondents to sort of find their foothold because Pete Davidson and Leslie Jones just ate up so much of the airtime in the Weekend Update desk.
Yeah, you know, they both had a lot of runs, a lot of good runs. I mean, the thing about the two of them is I think between the two of them, only one, I think maybe one Leslie Jones was not great. But in general, they were either good to very good to excellent. So, you know, you're really, when you've got those two really taking up a lot of time, you know, you're looking for other stuff. It's hard to fit in there. But I do think that we still need to find fresh new characters that hit. I think this was a year we didn't add to the lineup just yet.
Okay. What about the 10-to-1 sketches?
This was a year, I thought, a great lineup of 10-to-1 sketches. I mean, I think you look at Ariana Grande did, you know, her playing The Sound of Music and What Would Maria Have Really Said? Excellent sketch. You know, Melissa McCarthy shows up for the Whiskers Are We. Great execution. You know, we talked about Oprah Winfrey. With Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, we had Bronx Speed at 10-to-1. One of, I think, the great sketches of that era at 10-to-1. Matthew McConaughey at his Amtrak meeting where he plays a weird guy with a big hand. Elizabeth Banks does the ghetto brunch where everyone's talking about how it's a bunch of white women talking about how ghetto things are. And then she talks about how she actually is in the ghetto. For me, though, the runner-up for me, Larry David episode, you know, it's Sheila Sauvage is back at the bar with, you know, for Last Call with him. And I thought that was always great. The fifth time we've seen Last Call, it delivers every time, you know. And the only reason I'd say it probably wasn't my pick of the season is it wasn't a new sketch and it wasn't the best of those sketches, but it was really, really, really excellent, most excellent in it's done. For me, the 10-to-1 sketch of the year was the baby shower sketch from the Amy Schumer, which is Amy Schumer is Jesse, the best friend of Cecily Strong's character who crashes the party, the wedding shower of Vanessa Bayer. Mm-hmm. And then when Cecily Strong can't find her purse, Jesse loses it and somebody took it. We're not leaving here until someone gives it back. And it starts where you think Vanessa Bayer is going to be the crazy one in the sketch because she doesn't know how pregnancy works. And then Jesse is kind of the crazy one. And then at some point she asks Cecily Strong's character, what is in the purse? And there's this list that just goes on and on from Cecily Strong that is super funny. And then the payoff is really good. It was weird. It was high energy. It was exactly what I want to see as the last sketch of the night. So just great job there.
Okay. So breaking from the format of following an episode, let's talk about some of the other superlatives. What about the best cameo of the season?
You know, not as many big cameos this year. I would say I'm going to take out Larry David because I think his Bernie Sanders was in a category by himself. I thought Maya Rudolph coming back and doing Bronx Beat, doing a new character for a Christmas show was excellent. Al Sharpton showing up was fun. Couple of Canadians showed up, in the Ryan Gosling. I would say for me, the runner up again going to the season finale was Jason Sudeikis in the Regine sketch. Not a great sketch, but his performance was just excellent. It was great to see, and we just talked about it, great to see him come back, and great to see what a seasoned professional he is. But for me, the cameo of the year was seeing in the Chris Hemsworth episode, Will Ferrell came back to play George W. Bush announcing his candidacy for president. And it was just watching a virtuoso pianist play a concert. He's just so good and so fun, and the writing was very strong, and it was a great way to kick off that episode. That was probably an on-the-line episode overall, but that was just great, and Will Ferrell, he still has it in an unbelievable way. Just super strong.
Now, Rich, when you rate the cameos, do you apply any of your specific cameo rules to, so say, like, if Will Ferrell didn't stay through the good nights, do you hold that against him?
I probably would, but you know what? No, I did just look at individual, so even if someone showed up in two sketches, I would just pick the one sketch that was the most notable. But it's always going to be the first one because, as I say in the rule of cameo, once you're cameoing in a second sketch, it doesn't have that excitement. It doesn't have that whatever piece. So certainly that gets lost.
Okay. What about my favorite category, the Oh Boys of the year?
So lot of Oh Boys in general. there always is. How could there not be? You know, from Miley Cyrus's weird homecoming dance, to Mark the Pirate, which is probably John Rudnitsky's only starring sketch. Sarah's Desire and Tina Fey, which was the weird acting coach. There was a lot of Oh Boys here. Weekend Update. Willie, every time Willie showed up.
I feel like one time you liked Willie.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you get under my skin at a certain point and I'm with you. Laura Parsons for me was an boy. But I would say, the runner up, and these two were so boys that it was hard to say. From a really tough Jonah Hill episode, there was a murder mystery episode where instead of figuring out who killed the person, it really came down to more about how bad of a dump Jonah Hill's character had taken. But for me, I think the biggest boy was in an also rough Russell Crowe episode. In our first sketch post monologue was the Henry the Eighth Experience, where Russell Crowe played a hologram representation of Henry the Eighth just yelling at women, "Bear me a son.
Bear me a son.
Bear me a son." I think this sketch was 93 minutes long. I think they had to cancel all the other sketches and go into the late night news and first look on KTLA or whatever goes after this. Really just a rough sketch.
Bear me a son.
No fault of Russell Crowe, who threw himself into it. But that was a tough one.
Yeah, I know Bear Me a Son is your pick, but I feel like we didn't spend enough time talking about the Trump tweets sketch.
Yes, thank you. Yes, you know what? I had that on my list as one of the – it was a tough sketch from its very conception of – it was a meta sketch where the cast is performing a sketch and Trump is tweeting about it in real time, trying to make fun of his of Trump's tweeting habits. But it was really one of those no fish nor fowl, didn't know what was going on, the timing of it, waiting for them to have to sort of read the text that would pop up as a graphic. It was that should have just been the hashtag boy for Trump tweets.
Well, I feel like that you really have a couple of sketches from that Trump episode of there's the Trump tweets, and then there's also the Trump 2 years into the future sketch. where he's sort of like, it's like you're waiting for something funny to happen in the sketch where it seems like it's just almost like a Trump commercial.
Oh yeah, to pick the boy of the Trump sketch. I mean, him playing Gene, the, was it the laser harp player? Yeah. And the, oof, it was just overall just so hard. Really, really hard.
Love the boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Rich, let's go from the worst of the worst to the best of the best. What was the best episode of the season?
You know, I'm glad to say that there were at least five episodes that were in contention for this, which was really exciting. But I think no surprise, even taking out the Bernie Sanders impression, I think that, you know, of all the good episodes, Fred Armisen was very strong. Julie Louis-Dreyfus was very strong episode. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, very strong episode. Even Elizabeth Banks was, surprisingly, when I look back on it, very, very strong, but nothing compares to Larry David. I mean, what a great, I mean, you know, I think it was just such a great episode, you know, across the board. His monologue was great. This was the, you know, we had this FBI sketch where he's playing Kevin Roberts, because I you know, I got that bitch a donut, and just really funny. You had your Burn Your Enthusiasm. You had, you know, you had Totina's pizza rolls. You know, you had, you know, a bunch of songwriting. You had Last Call. I mean, really, there was a Super Bowl thing from Cam Newton and Peyton Manning that was just really good. You know, and just across the board, just really, really strong, really fun energy. You know, fun people showing up in Weekend Update. It was just really, really strong. So I think for me, pound for pound, there really wasn't a miss. Derek Zoolander showing up as a weekend update correspondent, who I'm not a fan of, did a very good job.
Much funnier than that. Zoolander too.
Yeah. So, you know, intro to songwriting post update, which was a weird thing about a song and a frog and tiny frogs, you know, rising up. And it was just so bizarre and just so funny. So, to me, no question. That's the episode of the year.
Okay, so you have episode of the year. I'd like to make a proposal for a new category for the tackies, whether you want to do it this year or in future years. I feel like we also need the boy episode of the year.
Oh, well, that's a no-brainer. I mean, I think that the Donald Trump episode exists in a world unto itself that is almost not fair to, you know, that it was the boy of the year.
You know, I do wonder how it holds up, because I remember not thinking it was I remember you were definitely lower on it at the time. I wonder, going back, just like that, we're talking about a couple of the sketches that were memorably bad. What were the highlights?
Well, you know, I would say I think the cold open was definitely not bad.
Uncle was from that episode.
Yeah, you know, you had Bad Girls, the music video, which I did not think was necessarily hilarious, but it wasn't bad. Hotline Bling, I think, was...
When he was dancing.
Yeah, it was okay. Mr. Crocker, which was a piece that sort of was pretty funny until Donald Trump shows up, was not bad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the porn stars was probably one of the weakest porn stars I've seen in a while.
That Mr. Crocker, that's where Beck Bennett is like the dad at the table, right?
The dad who wants to lay down sick beats as a DJ, which was actually a pretty good piece until the end. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly, when you look at the boys of the year, I mean, you know,
there were low lows.
The Jonah Hill was a real boy. I mean, a lot to not like there. The Russell Crowe really had almost nothing going for it, unfortunately. Even the season premiere, the Miley Cyrus episode, there really wasn't much about it that was all that great in hindsight. I think we probably talked about it fondly because the show was back and we had a lot to talk about. But looking back on it, it really wasn't a great episode. So the good news is there's few and far betweens on the boys. But overall, there were a couple there, certainly.
I like that. Then as we go through the year, we could say like, Rich, was this a contender for the boy episode of the year?
Yeah, good point. Good point.
All right. And then, Rich, the last category is the cast MVP who are you giving the top prize to this year?
You know, it's, I think this is such a no-brainer. It's you know, it's almost a letdown to talk about, but the reasons why are sort of, you can't argue. I mean, you had a lot of great people doing a lot of great stuff, but clearly the person that is almost anchoring the show at this point is Kate McKinnon. I mean, you almost, if you sort of walk through the show, you know, in your cold open, you know, she's going to play Hillary Clinton and do the great job, or she's going to come in with a big character like the head of the Democratic Party, whose name Debbie
Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So she's going to, you know, so she's big there. You know, your live sketches, she really held down the NSA alien investigation and had a lot of great live sketch pieces. She plays weird really well. She's the go-to person at Weekend Update, whether it's Frieda Santini, whether it's Colin's upstairs neighbor, whether it's Angela Merkel. I mean, almost any great character is going to be her. You know, you're going to see her in almost every single Weekend Update, you know, and all the way to the 10 to 1 sketch. I mean, you know, whether, you know, what are the only two reoccurring 10 to 1 sketches that are worth noting? Last Call with Sheila Sauvage and Whiskers Are We. So from the cold opening to right before the goodnights, it's Kate McKinnon kind of is going to be in that clutch position. If any one person on the cast is going to deliver, and many of them can deliver, but if it's going to be one person, it's going to be Kate McKinnon pretty much across the board. She's going to be the person to deliver.
Okay. Rich, are you ready for some questions from the listeners of the podcast?
Yes, absolutely. I wish I had done some research ahead of time, but we'll play it in real time and see what happens.
Yeah, we'll do it live. Okay,
yes,
this
exactly.
is SNL. We will do things live. And we got a couple of questions following the finale. We told people that you could write in for our season wrap-up pod. Of course, that email address is snl@postshowrecaps in the future if you want to send us anything. And why don't we start off with an email from Will Simon, who wants to know, can you both power rank all of the SNL 41 cast members in terms of your personal enjoyment of them overall? Only factor in things they did this season. Thank you for taking my question. How about instead of a top 16, could you give us a top 5, Rich?
Well, I think it goes back to sort of who had really good seasons. I mean, I think, you know, obviously I think Kate McKinnon for me, I loved Colin Jost. I really converted on Kenan Thompson in a major way. Vanessa Bayer in the pre-tapes did wonderful. And then I don't care how his season was. I don't care how little or much screen time he got. Bobby Moynihan, for me, is the spirit of SNL, and he's my guy. So whether he deserves it or not this season, I don't care. I put him in my top 5.
It's really hard for me. I don't have anybody in the cast that I feel especially connected to. I feel like that I enjoy most of them in different ways. So it's very hard for me to sort of like come up with this list. I feel like it's very much like a what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
In terms of these people, you know, there's a bunch of people that I really, really feel strongly about, and a couple of people I'm just like indifferent about.
Yeah, I'll also say I really do want to give a shout out to, even though we didn't talk much about it, I do love Cecily Strong's characters that she does on Weekend Update. A lot of, you know, from the girl you wish you hadn't started a conversation with at a party to, you know, the two-dimensional female character in a male-driven comedy. I like what she's doing. I like the writing of those. I like that they feel different and new. And so she's someone who I always really enjoy seeing.
If I could, let me just give some praise to Jay Farrow, who I don't feel like we've talked enough about. And I know you had him as a loser overall on the season, but I feel like that he also had some high highs and a couple of transcendent moments where he's doing the impressions of everybody. I know that's always been his strong suit, but I feel like that I know he hasn't broken out in any way, but I feel like that maybe he gets unrecognized sometimes.
Well, I agree with you. I think that you're right. I think that, and I mean, and when I say that he didn't have a good season, I'm not commenting on his ability, his talent, how much I like him. I just think screen time wise, he really got lost. He did sort of, you know, a lot of his impressions have not necessarily connected. Part of it is because I think sometimes he doesn't find the funny in those impressions, but often it's because, you know, you're playing to a primarily white audience and you're doing rappers and other very notable, very well-known figures, you know, to an urban audience that the white audience like myself doesn't know as well. So it's not his his fault. That said, I think that the format they found of, hey, there was a secret meeting of comedians, secret meeting of rappers, it gave us a way for him to say, it was to do rapid fire one or two sentence impressions to see how versatile he is, see how much he can change up his energy and his delivery in a rapid fire way, which I thought overall was just really good.
Okay. Then let's take another question from Becky, who says, just like last year, you both had me convinced the finale was the last time I'd ever see Keenan. And I have to say, as soon as I saw Sudeikis show up, I was nearly convinced and expected he'd been sent out after an epic what up with that. So my question is, how do you both keep getting it wrong? Are you relying on inside sources that keep leading you astray? I feel like that this year, I feel like we beat that drum far less than we've done in previous years.
Yeah, I mean, because the last season there was definitely a very long-standing rumor going around that this was going to be his last year. So we certainly didn't invent that. The truth is, you know, he's been on the show since 2005. He is the longest running cast member in the history of the 41 years of Saturday Night Live. And he's in his late 30s. He's 38 years old. I mean, so many of our greats, when they talk about, when Kristen Wiig or someone else talks about, why did you leave? So often they'll say, I just couldn't do it anymore. It's just being up all night and working these 6-day weeks and, you know, and being so off the schedule of my family and friends.
It agrees with him.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Keenan just sort of has fallen into a pocket and he just is like, I'm not going anywhere. I remember sort of notably many years ago when Daryl Hammond was the longest running cast member, he admitted on Howard Stern, he said, I don't write anymore. He said, I'm too old. I'm done. I'm now at the point where if somebody wants to write me in a sketch or needs me to do an impression, I love it. And I jumped at the chance. And if nobody writes anything for me, I'm not in the episode and that's fine, but I don't stay up all night. I don't have to burn the midnight oil. And maybe in a way that's something that Keenan's doing, but he seems to be very engaged and he really gives 110%. So I always think that just statistically, every year's got to be the last year. Although I will say, and we said this, that I don't think that this was not a farewell Keenan episode. So if he decides to leave over the summer, I'm suspecting it was not something that he planned on doing.
Okay. Johnny DeSilvera, the great Johnny DeSilvera, wrote in to say, hey, Robin Rich, who do you two think will play Donald Trump in the fall leading up to the election and potentially after if he wins? Are they going to stick with Daryl Hammond or go back to Taron Killam or go to somebody else entirely? Of course, that 2016 is an election year. We've seen in the past, SNL has done some of its best work during these election cycles that we've seen. I believe it was back in 2008. They did Thursday night specials of primetime election coverage on Thursday nights. So, Rich, if we are going to be seeing Donald Trump in the fall, how do you think SNL is going to handle that?
Well, SNL has a bad track record of pushing an impression from one cast member to another, even when they should. They will generally stick with someone beyond what's reasonable. So, if history is on your side, you're probably going to expect to see them just continue using Daryl Hammond. And I think that one of the things I had read in one of the an article about something relating to Saturday Night Live is that at one point they really wanted Jimmy Fallon to come down and do Donald Trump, and he couldn't do it. So they ended up using Daryl Hammond, and then that sort of started, got us on this thing. So I think there's a very good chance that they really push, Jimmy Fallon to come down and say, look, assuming that he loses the election, we need you for approximately 1 month, a couple of shows, please come and do it. So I would say expect to see Daryl Hammond, but my outside shot would be Jimmy Fallon showing up for a couple of cameos.
But the season started with Taron Killam as Donald Trump. I mean, what happened there? It wasn't like that we were coming out there like, oh my God, oh boy, Taron Killam as Donald Trump. What is this holy hell? get rid of Taron Killam's Donald Trump.
Yeah, it was a weird, I think that this started when Donald Trump hosted and they added him, you know, that Daryl Hammond did it as well as Taron Killam. I think maybe it just, you know, connected. I think people remember Daryl Hammond doing a great Donald Trump back in the day. And it was a great Donald Trump back in the day. I just think that the energy of his Donald Trump doesn't necessarily jive with the energy and the biorhythms of the show today. He often feels like Daryl Hammond's doing an excellent job on another show, and he's in a different show than everyone else, and not because he's bad, but because it just doesn't fit as well. So I don't quite get it. I don't know if it was they thought Ted Cruz was going to be the person, and they wanted to switch it from Bobby Moynihan to
somebody
Taron Killam.
Thought Ted Cruz was going to be the nominee.
Well, at one point, I'm not going to get political, but I think there was a moment in time where he looked like if Donald Trump when Donald Trump implodes, Ted Cruz would be the presumptive nominee after him, just from number of electoral votes at a certain point. So I don't know what they think, but I think all that's possible.
Rich, just going back to September of 2014 when Daryl Hammond ended up taking over as the announcer. So do you feel like that there was even a glimmer in his eye that he would be such a important part of this SNL cast, where he would be potentially playing either a President Trump or potentially playing Bill Clinton for 8 more years?
Oh, well, I certainly think that the Bill Clinton thing was the Bill Clinton thing was certainly in everybody's mind, but I don't think that he took the gig thinking about sort of cameos. I don't even know that the first season he did it, he was doing it from New York. He might have been doing it from his LA home. It was clearly it's all pre-tape, as it had been with Don Pardo for many years. So, I don't know that he saw it as necessarily a way in as much as just an interesting gig to book.
All right. And one last question. This is from Ike Moore. It says, "Hey guys, how much of a chance do we see Justin Timberlake host to promote his animated movie Trolls and his song Can't Stop the Feeling? Also, do you think that we'll see Adam Sandler host in season 42?
So, good questions. My opinion, I don't know anything. I do think that Justin is kind of feeling like, I did the host thing, I killed it, go out on top. I think that he'll wait for Jimmy Fallon to come back and host and then do that again, either as a musical guest or just as a surprise. I think that he's very smart to know timing and to know that he is now considered one of the great guest hosts of the, you know, of the 2000s or the late 2000s. So why go back to the well one more time? So I suspect that we will absolutely see him again, but we will not see him as a guest host for a long time. Do you think differently?
Justin Timberlake, I mean, I don't know if he's that calculated about it. I mean, I would defer to you if you think that that's how he looks at it, but I didn't think that he was really just waiting to pick his spot on it.
Right. Yeah, I think he's maybe we'll see him again, maybe not. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Adam Sandler is an interesting one in that, you know, he was the king of the world for a certain period of time. There was a moment where you would say in this moment, he's the most successful SNL alumni currently working in movies. He didn't need SNL. All that I've ever heard is that he left under very good circumstances and left as a family member with Lauren and such, but really has not come back. I think, as putting aside 40th anniversary and such, clearly there have been many movies he has done where you have to imagine, based on what they knew the critical and audience reaction was going to be, that the movie studio was probably begging him to host SNL as a way to promote the movie that they suspected might lose them a lot of money. And he resisted. He certainly doesn't need it. So I don't know anything, but if I had to guess, I would say that he is waiting to be back on top again, that I suspect we'll see him show up when he has a big hit something so that he can return again as the conquering hero instead of that he might feel like tail between his legs, although I don't think so. I think he's fantastic and he's good at what he does and he plays in his lane very well, but I suspect that he doesn't think that and he may want to wait until he sort of has a big hit. But I don't know. I certainly haven't heard anything.
Okay, Rich. And then let's play our final favorite close out the season game. Who is the host of the season 42 premiere?
That's a good question. I think, you know, it's going to be a political year. So, you know, I think you'll certainly see cameos from, you know, presidential candidates, because that's sort of going to be the big push. I don't know what's coming out at the beginning of next year. I'm going to say Sudeikis. I'm going to say Sudeikis. He'll have a show coming on Fox that he'll need to promote. He has certainly been very warming towards coming back to do cameos on SNL this year, which he hadn't been. And I think SNL, when they can, always likes to open with an alumni because it sort of gets some excitement going. So if I had to guess, that's who I would say, just pulling a name out of my head. How about you?
All right. I'm going to go with somebody who has a big movie coming out this summer. I'm going to go with Jared Leto. Suicide Squad is coming out. I don't know if he's the kind of guy who wants to host SNL, but I feel like that he'll be very hot come like August.
Right. That makes sense. I could see that. Yeah, definitely could be.
Be a good booking, sort of like following the Chris Pratt hosting the premiere of season 40 coming off of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. Yeah, that could be. He would definitely be a good return.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Rich, do you have a hashtag you want to give people who have listened to this and want to tweet about this episode?
I mean, I'll go hashtag oh boy.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
What's the correct spelling of oh boy?
You know, I debate this. Is it O-O-H or is it H-U-H? Or U? We've debated this offline. I could see it either way. What do you think?
I feel like it's like U-H-H boy.
I like that. Let's go with that.
All right. Good stuff. Of course, you could find Rich on Twitter. He is at RichTech. Rich, what do you have coming up this summer? Some storytelling, blogging? What's in the works?
Stories in the LA area. That's probably going to be the big focus of my summer.
So do you have to really mine the story? Like, I feel like I would, like, I think that a lot of things happened to me, but I don't remember any of them. So
it's a lot of prodding your memory to go, wait, did I ditch someone at the Canadian border once? I think I might have. It's a lot of that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where people have to go out in real life and see those stories?
Yes. That's all live stuff.
Well, that's a lot of work, Rich.
Yes, I get you.
You got to get like a recording of that for people.
We'll get there.
Okay. All right. Well, all good stuff. Again, we do appreciate your votes for the podcast awards at podcastawards.com. Post your recaps in the TV and film and People's Choice Podcast of the Year. Thank you guys very much who have been voting. And then also looking forward to reading your comments on posterrecaps.com. And also a shout out to Scott St. Pierre, who did help out with so much of the editing that went into the SNL poster recaps. And of course, James Keast for his outstanding work talking about the music all season long.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much to those guys.
And also Mike Bloom, thanks for filling in for me along the way. A couple of times, so appreciate that. And then, Rich, that's it until season 42. Any final thoughts?
No, great season. Looking forward to next year.
All right, take care, everybody. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Bye.